Welcome to the Human and Technology Podcast. This podcast is for anyone who develops, distributes, or uses technology. For all those who always have the feeling that technology overwhelms or dominates them. For everyone who wants to know how to deal with technology in everyday life. For anyone who wants to understand what technology does to us and how we can get our lives back. This podcast is for those who want to make technology sexy. All the product developers, designers, UX, UI professionals, product managers, CTOs, and CEOs. And it is for you. My name is Dr. Peter Ryska. My friends call me Dr. Peter. I am your host, and I am happy that you are here. Will technology become part of us humans, or will we humans become part of technology? In this episode of the Human Technology Podcast, I will talk about the digitalization of our bodies and the connected redefinition of the relationship between humans and technology. This is definitely a human technology issue, not so much as an HMI, as a human machine interface, not as a human machine, human technology corporation, but as a merge of humans and technologies. And this will probably redefine the role of technology as part of the human, as part of human lives, as the way we live. And so we will have this redefinition of human technology systems. This matches very well with the megatrend digitalization. There is no real serious definition of digitalization out there. Some people believe it's just like the digital government or digital documents or making everything into PDFs or the industrial internet, machines talking to machines and working more or less by themselves. And all this somehow is digitalization, but it is far more. And at the end of the day, the question is, do we really need a definition? I believe not, because at the end, everything we can digitalize will be digitalized. At the end, everything, every object, every living being, everyone will have an internet connection. This is not only your doorbells or your refrigerator or your car. This is also your coffee pot and the palm tree that is sitting in the corner of your office. And all these things, these doorbells and refrigerators and speech assistants that become absolutely ubiquitous, they are all parts of the Internet of Things, the IoT. Smart systems, smart devices that connect through a network and communicate with each other. It's a constant data exchange, a constant exchange of information between these devices. And at the end of the day, we'll create new services, new values, new ideas, new benefits out of this connectivity and the network with its constant, continuous data exchange. And part of the Internet of Things is the Internet of Bodies, the IOB. And this expression, IOB, was created almost 10 years ago, 2016, 2017. And it describes networked devices that control the human body, that collect physiological, biometric, or behavioral data. And they usually are connected. The device itself is connected with other devices like smartphones, like PCs, or with other IOB parts, with other devices connected to your buddy, and they exchange data through either wireless networks or wired networks. And behind that, there is a lot of apps and local hardware, software, connectivity, networks, all the server landscape, all the infrastructure behind this. And all this does it. And the first activities we have here is health-related data like heartbeats, blood pressure, or analysis of sleep cycles. So all this is part of the IOB group. And before we get deeper into this, I would like to roll out, to look back, to analyze how computing power changed its relation to humans, to us, and yeah, how that changed over time. In the late 60s, 1960s, and the 60s of the 20th century, there was computing power was something far away. It was somewhere, in some basements of universities or research laboratories, or it was far away. And when you wanted some computing power, you needed to write down your problem on a piece of paper and bring that to the person sitting there and operating these computing things. And then, they did various things. And at the end, they had an output and they printed that out and sent that back by post or brought it to you physically. So that was the very early beginning of how to use computing power, computing devices. And I haven't experienced that myself, but my aunt was one of these persons operating these machines. And so I learned quite a lot from her. She talked a lot about this, how her job was and what she was doing. So I have a bit of an insight into that time. In the early 80s, computing power appeared on our desks. So we had personal computers, PCs. And so it was personal computing, but it was mine, it was on my desk. And it became visible. So the first one, I got my first PC in 1987. And suddenly I had a big box on my desk with a huge screen, with a cathode ray screen. And it was a black and white, or it was green and black, or yellow and black. So it was, but it was there. And the guy selling it to me was a colleague of my dad. He said to me, "Oh, you got 20 megabytes hard drive. You will never fill that. That is so much data storage. 20 megabytes. That's a lot." All right, times change, and we know that today this is not a lot, but at that time it was quite good. Anyway, in the 80s, PCs, computing powers showed up on our desks, and in the 90s we made it mobile by creating laptops. And the first ones were pretty heavy and pretty bulky, not so easy to use, but it became mobile. We could carry around computing power. In 2007, Steve Jobs stood on a stage and said, "We have a new MP3 player, we have a new smartphone, and we have a new camera, and we combined all this, and it's called the iPhone." And that was a real game changer, looking backwards, not only as far as smartphones and interaction and touchscreens and availability and mobile connectivity is concerned, but also in the location where we carry around computing power. So before that, of course, we had the smartphones, or the mobile phones, not the smartphones, the mobile phones, the non-smart mobile phones, and they were, we also carried them around. But a real computing device with enormous amounts of capabilities and different apps and all the different things you could do with that, that was the smartphone, and that was the iPhone was the first one. And suddenly, computing power was in our pockets or in our purses. Much easier to carry around. And I hardly know anyone that is not constantly carrying the smartphone around with him or with her. So we have this, and this was a game changer in the location of this one. And the next steps then will be that computing power is moving to the surfaces of our bodies, so onto our skins. And the most obvious example is the smartwatch, but we also have virtual reality or augmented reality glasses, smart glasses, all different devices that are on the surface. And the next step then will be that computing power gets into our bodies. And this is basically how I would like to structure the next couple of minutes that we're talking about. So that the first group of devices we have in the Internet of Bodies are external devices. The second one are internal devices. And the third level then is embedded devices. So internal means you have a more or less independent device inside your body. And embedded, opposed to that, means that it is really part of the human body, that it is merging into the human biological system. Right, so let's start with the external devices. So the most obvious device is a smartwatch or fitness trackers, and they measure how long you walk, how much you walk, how much sports you do, your calorie consumption, physiological measurements like blood pressure, blood sugar, heart frequency. It can analyze your sleep rhythm. Tons of different things, and it may make sense or not. I'm discussing this every now some of my network peers, and they say, why do you have one of these smartwatches? What is it for? And then I say, it's for this and this. And they say, I don't care. Yes, okay, you're allowed to not care about these things. But in 2022, 500 million wearables means smartwatches and fitness trackers, 500 million wearables were sold. And that will raise to 650, 700, 750 in the next couple of years. So it is huge markets, and millions of people are having that. First of all, and this is the relationship we have here. First of all, the relationship between humans and technologies, it is just measuring things. It doesn't imply or doesn't indicate or doesn't do any change of your behavior necessarily. It's just telling you, this is your heart rate, this is your sleep rhythm, this is your blood sugar, and you have used so and so many calories during the day. So all this is measurements and the displaying of the resulting data. But it serves as a motivator. It's a motivator to reach your own targets. On my Apple Watch, there are these circles, and they show me how many calories have I used per day beyond my basic metabolism. How many minutes of sports have I done? How many hours have I spent standing opposed to sitting? All this is doing, there are circles, and these circles motivate me. If I find out in the afternoon, the red circle for the calories is just at 50%, I need to do something. I need to take a walk around the block or do some fitness exercises, whatever I want to do. Excuse me. Whatever I do, this is possible, and then this is motivating me. And there's a lot of gamification. I can see this, and I can compare it with the results of my wife, with other people, with myself. Yeah, I can say, okay, last week I had an average of 10,000 steps per day, and this week's I have 11,000 steps per day. And this is not so-called nudging. They're nudging you. They're pushing you towards a certain direction, and it's a slight little push that you get. Sometimes you don't even feel it. But at the end, if you reach your targets, you get a dopamine shot into your blood, which is the hormone that makes you feel happy. It's the rewarding hormone. Whenever you reach something you wanted to reach, you get a little shot of that, and you can get addictive to that, by the way. Every single click, a like or love or reply you get on social media, on social networks, that is pretty much doing the same. And so for me, it is a good thing. I said, hey, yeah, I need to close my rings and I will do something. I wouldn't do this probably if I did not have my smartwatch. So it's doing a good job, and indirectly, it is changing my behavior. Still under my control, I can do it and cannot do it. Can go to bed in the evening and say, hey, yep, all the rings are just on 25%. Okay, nobody will blame me for that. I can do this. So I'm still having control over what's happening. Yeah, and so this is a positive thing. We are having others, like, for example, smart glasses that we can use for various purposes. We have different sensors for moving, for being mobile. We have attention sensors, so all that is, and all these devices, and this is what they have in common, they're not in our bodies, they are on our bodies, they're on our skins, they're not anyhow invasive, they stay outside, but they are on the skin. They measure directly on the surfaces of our bodies. And the second level then is the internal devices. And those are devices you can either swallow or you can get injected to analyze certain aspects of your health or to create so-called human augmentation. Let's have a look at the things that you can swallow, like a pill, like a little digital pill, the ingestibles. These are pills that have a digestible surface, and then once that one is destroyed in your stomach, they become active. And they can either have a camera, so they can film what's going on. They can have different sensors. For example, if you have taken medication, they can see that. And they are sending with different technologies the results to the outside, usually throwing a plaster that you have or sticked to your skin or directly to your smartphone, depends on the technology. And to my surprise, when I did the researches for this episode of the Human Technology Podcast, the first one of these were approved by the FDA in the USA, the Food and Drug Administration in the United States in 2017. So it's not really new. It's 6, 7 years old that we have this one. And I see there are a lot of applications in the health area, particularly in this one. For example, to detect cancer, rectal cancer. Well, you have a camera in there and you can see the changes there. And this way you're having a good chance to know things from the inside, particularly of the digestion system, from the inside of your body. And so, yeah, this is one part. You can have comparable things, for example, in your tooth, that you have one tooth that controls your diet, that controls your alcohol consumption. And so at the end of the day, you may get a message, hey, there was a lot of fat and sugar and carbs in your food today. And then for the next day, you can change your behavior. And you can say, okay, I will eat a little less candy during the day, so I will reduce my sugar consumption. So this is, and again, you're still in control of what's going on. It's measuring. These devices are measuring data, and they're transferring this data, and then on some app, on some server, somewhere else, it is somehow digested, it is worked on, and then it's turned into useful information that you can use or you cannot use it. This is still the opportunity they have. And then with the human augmentation, we reach the point where these devices inside our body take action. They do things. And human augmentation means that you have a NFC, a near-field communication chip, implemented under your skin. Usually it's in your hand. Very often the part between your thumb and your index finger is used. And You can use that, for example, it's a means of identification. It shows you, all right, this is Peter approaching something somewhere, and then something is allowed. For example, you can open your car with that, or you can open your house door with that. Well, the next step then will be that your passport and your ID and your driver's license and your credit card data is all stored on that chip. And if, for example, you go to a rental car company, you do not need to take out all these things and put them on the desk of the person behind it, the person of the rental car company. But you can just put your hand onto some kind of reader and the person will know right away, hey, this is this and that person, and he or she is having a driving license. And so it's a pretty cool device that makes it fast and easy to do things. But this is a piece of technology we've implemented that does something, that changes my environment, that takes activities. So this is the augmented human and the injected NFC chips that we have. Third level, embedded devices. These are devices that are fully merged into the body. Typical example is the brain-computer interface. I will talk about this one a little later. An existing example are pacemakers for the heart, for people that suffer from heart diseases, and also artificial hearts. They are so deeply in our bodies, and they're so much embedded with our biological systems that they're an own category, and they do something. Yeah? They keep our heart rate constant. They keep our heart working, or they replace our heart and pump the blood through our veins. This is what's happening with that. Another one is artificial pancreas. So diabetics may not have one, or it is damaged, it's not working properly, and an artificial pancreas can then work as an integrated or like an integrated insulin pump. Diabetics have the problem, they don't have this insulin, and they have blood sugar values that may be too high, that has to be regulated. And today you have to measure your blood sugar, which is that you get a little drop of blood out of your finger and you put it onto a sensor, and the sensor then tells you the value, and then you have to calculate how much insulin do I need. Then you have to give yourself an insulin shot, and all this is replaced, or can be replaced, with an artificial pancreas, which includes the measurement of the blood sugar and also the amount of insulin that is giving into the blood. There are implants for the retina. The retina is the part of our eye that allows us seeing, so that we can make the blind seeing or blind seeing again. For some blind people, this is possible. They get this piece of technology implemented, and then they can see. Same with the cochlea implants. That's for hearing. In your ear, you have the main sensor for hearing is the cochlea. And if you replace that one or add a sensor, a respective sensor, an implant to this, then people can start hearing again. So we have these chances. And the next step then, but this is sheer future. I haven't heard anything about that this is somehow reality. Are nanobots, little bots that are put into your veins or into your blood vessels, and that transport medication to exactly the location where it is most efficient inside your body. So if you take a painkiller because you have pain in your left knee, then the nanobots will transport the medication right to your left knee and release it there. So you will not have it in your entire body, but you will have it, first of all, there where you need it. Or if you have a cancer treatment, the chemotherapy will be taken to exactly the location of the tumor, and you will not spoil your entire body. You will not put this poison, you will not poison your full body, but you will put it exactly where it has the most effect. And also nanobots one day may be able to repair our bodies. So clean our veins from all the dirt is in there, or if you have a broken leg, a broken bone, nanobots will heal that. So all these things may be possible in the future. And again, this is technology that is in our body, getting active in our body, and at the very end of the day, are really embedded systems that are essential parts of our physiological bodies. Brain-computer interfaces. There's a lot of discussion ongoing about this. Neuralink, one of the companies of Elon Musk, just implemented the first chip into a human brain to allow communication with outside instances. And these chips are really merged into the human brain. They collect data from there and they send it to the outside so that people that heavily handicapped, they cannot move their body anymore, suddenly can use computers anymore, or even just can start to communicate with their environment again. And so it's the first real step of merging humans and the neurons of humans, human intelligence, with artificial devices and artificial intelligence. And it's not only about health, there's a lot of potential behind this one, up to the point where we can improve parts of our thinking, of our brain, of our decision making. And this is the point then when, for me, it starts getting creepy, because if it's not a one-way street, it's a two-way street. If you have the chance to get information out of your brain with a chip, it's pretty easy to have it the other way around, to get information into the brain. And we can see this. There is chips out there that Parkinson patients get implemented, and they get information into their brain that calm it down so that this trembling of the Parkinson is reduced or totally, fully eliminated. And this is the beginning. So my fear, and this is where it gets really creepy, is that one day we can control humans with that, that we can make humans doing things they don't want to do with that chip in the brain. So it's definitely having two sides. On one side, enormous benefits for people who have limited or no abilities to communicate, either with technology or with other humans. On the other side, misuse is an obvious chance that we implement with this. And for me, it's like the more embedded systems are, the closer, the more they get into our bodies, the more invasive they are, the more creepy it gets to me, the more I have doubts, the more I have both a rational problem and an emotional problem with technology, with getting all to this. All right, so what's it all about? So a lot is about data security here. This is not the focus of this episode, but it is more the, let's say, the change in the relationship between humans and technologies that we have here. And as long as we have measurements only, like in the smartwatches, like in the fitness trackers, I don't have a single problem. I use this and I like it, and I'm fully aware of all the nudging and the little psychological tricks that are going on there and how I'm influenced that. But I'm fully aware I can take off my smartwatch anytime I want, and I will never put it on again if I don't want it. So I have this choice. I can do this. And for me, this is then a free decision of a free human doing something. It is different on the other end of the scale when we get into brain-computer interfaces. Benefits in certain situations, no doubt, absolutely clear, no question about this. but also a chance for manipulation, a chance for controlling humans and controlling thoughts. And this is the point when I say, all right, this is far too much. And the developments are there. We will not stop them, particularly because we have these clear benefits on one side. And so we'll not stop it. It is there. But we need to have some kind of control to get the most dangerous parts of this, to get the creepy parts of this, to get the manipulative parts of this under control and eliminate it. So, yes, technology will be parts of humans. No doubt about this. We will have this. And with that, automatically, humans will become part of technology. How far we go, that is our decision. And I'm positive, I'm pretty positive, that at the end of the day, we will find some way of controlling that and making it a benefit and not a threat to humanity. All right. Thanks again for listening to the Human Technology Podcast. I want to make this podcast your podcast, that you get the most out of it, that you have, I mean, you spend half an hour, 35, 40 minutes every 2 weeks with me, and I want you to get a lot of value out of this. And for this, please write me if you have something I should talk about. When you believe, hey, I want to hear the opinion of Peter, of Dr. Peter about this or that, write me an email, let me know this one. What are the things you are thinking about? So send an email to podcast@beyond-hmi.de or connect me on LinkedIn and then let me know your thoughts. Let me know, are there things you want to have my opinion on, you want to hear an episode about, and I will be more than happy to then realize that for you. That's it for today. Thank you for spending time with me. I hope you were able to take something with you and do something for yourself that will be forever. For an ongoing exchange, you will find me on LinkedIn and on my websites, peter-rusker.com and beyond-hmi.de. Write me an email on the podcast@beyond-hmi.de. Tune in next time. Take care and stay healthy.